Today on Maine Calling, Maine's economic outlook for the new year. Maine enters 2026 with a low unemployment rate and more state revenue than expected. Those are positive things, but for many people, this economy doesn't exactly feel so great. There are many ways to measure how the state's economy is doing and where it might be headed. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll talk with three experts who think deeply about where Maine stands and how the economy is serving the people. How does the slowdown in immigration affect small business? What about federal changes to healthcare, SNAP, and research dollars? Which regions of Maine are thriving and why? How does the economy feel to you? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by support from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. Quarry Cottages at Highland Green, committed to providing low-maintenance living and offering custom homes in Quarry Cottages, highlandgreenlifestyle.com. And by Bangor Savings Bank, committed to helping northern New England communities thrive. You matter more. Bangor.com.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. It is a new year, and we are going to take stock of where Maine's economy stands and where it might be headed. We talk with experts today about their projections for the state's financial health in 2026. Joining me for the hour, Amanda Rector, who is Maine's state economist, Patrick Woodcock, who is president and CEO of the Maine State Chamber of Commerce, and Yellow Light Breen, president and CEO of Maine Development Foundation. We invite you to join the conversation. What does this economy feel like to you? Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Hello and welcome to all of you.
Happy New Year.
Hi,
Good morning. This has become an annual program. So fun to see your smiling faces. Amanda, I'm going to start with you, but I'm going to ask all three of you the same question to take the 50,000 foot view to start our show off. And Amanda, give us the good, bad, and the ugly for the economy going forward.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. 2025. Uncertainty was the word of the year for sure. And it feels like that's continuing into 2026. And so while we made it through most of 2025 with the economy being pretty resilient to all of that uncertainty and able to sort of absorb some of the shocks that we're going through, as we got closer to the end of the year and heading into 2026, it's feeling like we're having maybe a harder time absorbing all of those shocks as the uncertainty continues. It doesn't feel like sort of the, you know, wheels are coming off the track right away, but certainly the fact that an extended period of uncertainty is going to make it harder for businesses and consumers to plan ahead. The longer that draws out, the harder and harder it's going to be to sort of continue to see the kinds of resilience that we saw through most of last year.
Yellow, I saw you nodding.
Yeah, I'm a really hopeful guy. I literally drive around with a 5-foot hopeful sign from our friend Charlie Hewitt when I travel the state. But the uncertainty is you know, really deep right now. I think because you've got, you know, a shrinking workforce nationally, you've got the uncertainty about tariffs. The Fed is starting to respond to all that. And I think if things slow down, the Fed will lower interest rates more, which might help the housing market. But you know, I think fundamentally, a lot of things have gone right in recent years for Maine. We've made up ground on a lot of other states in terms of wage growth, in terms of productivity. We've invested a lot in growing, you know, post-secondary training for our workers, research and development. But we still have a long ways to go. And I think it's hard to say to people, you should feel great if wages are up, but cost of housing is up twice as much as wages are. And you can't jawbone people into thinking they're better off than they really are. So I think it's going to take everything we can do to stay on track over the next year.
Patrick, what are you hearing from Maine's business community?
The risks that Amanda outlined were very real. I think they have narrowed. I think the scope of the tariff risk, we understand potentially the full risk. There might be an upside with the Supreme Court decision that may limit the president's use of this broad-based tariff authority. Public policy was disruptive. And in some sense, going into the new year, I think we have narrowed those risks. However, I think we get into some fundamental concerns about Maine's demographics. Amanda has spoken a lot about this, and I think we are entering a new chapter that may have happened to have initiated at the end of 2023 or 2024, where we're returning to one of the slowest population growth states in the country. And it's really hard to expand, meet your full economic potential without a growing employment in the state. And really, that leads, I think, fundamentally to building housing, addressing those fundamentals. But we really aren't going to be constraining our state's economy if we don't unleash housing production in the next few years.
I want to talk about something you just said, though, returning to slowest population growth in the nation, because, and I'll go back to you, Amanda. We just did a Maine calling recently. Something like 126,000 people have come to Maine in the last 5 years. This is about 10% of the state's population. Why do we think that's slowing?
So it's been really interesting to see the changing pattern. In the first years of the pandemic, 2021, 2022, we saw really robust population growth. And that was coming of all of our population growth comes from migration. So we have natural decline. We've talked about that. We have more deaths than births each year. So all of our population growth comes from people moving in. During 2021, 2022, we had a lot of people moving in, and they were moving in from other parts of the US. And that, as people were able to do remote work, it was very easy to sort of pick up and move somewhere else. And if you were in a more urban area and thinking about what the pandemic was like, the idea of I can keep my same job and I can go somewhere where there's outdoor recreation and I've got a great little community to be a part of and I've got a little more elbow space, all of those things made Maine very appealing. So we saw a lot of people move in. We've continued to see migration in 2023 and 2024, but at a slowing pace on the domestic front. What was really interesting for 2024, we had as much migration from international sources as we did from domestic ones. Now, the international migration piece, given current federal policies, is likely to pretty much dry up across the country. So we're looking more to just domestic migration. One of the real limiting factors recently on that has been housing. If you're going to move somewhere, you need a place to live. And we have really run into this disparity between a lot of demand for our housing and a really limited supply because for a long time, with our slow population growth, we weren't building a lot of housing. And so we ended up with a very limited available inventory. I wish I had 2025 numbers to share for population estimates. Normally I would. I don't because the federal government shutdown delayed a lot of the federal data releases. So we're still waiting on those. We will see what that looked like. But my guess is that it was a continuation of this trend where, because of the constraints of housing availability, migration into the state probably continued to sort of hopefully eke out a little bit of a gain, but definitely less than it had been in the early days of the pandemic.
And I know it's not the kind of measure that you study, Amanda, but U-Haul happened to release its numbers this morning, and Maine fell from number 13 to number 15. So still pretty high up in the terms of, by their measure, the number of people renting U-Hauls to move to Maine versus renting them to move out. But there are a couple things I really want to
seize on in what Amanda and Patrick have said. And I'll turn back to you, Yellow. One is immigration, but the other is this idea that people are coming from somewhere else and bringing their job with them and working remotely. And it strikes me that you, Yellow, and so many others have worked for so many years to make sure that rural Maine has high-speed internet, and that, you know, the argument and the real reality has been that businesses and people in rural Maine can't compete in this world without high-speed internet. But I think what we didn't account for, did we, was how many people would take advantage of that high-speed internet, move to Maine. And not to say they're not welcome, but they are not filling vacant jobs because they're bringing their jobs with them.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. Over the last few years, we've quadrupled the availability of high-speed internet across Maine, which is just really incredible when you think about it. It's almost been the exact flip side of the housing challenge. But housing is key, like Amanda said, because we have the stereotype that people from away, quote unquote, are coming from even more expensive geographies, and that somehow the housing in Maine still looks cheap to them. And when the state did a massive survey last year on why people move to Maine, even for the people that pulled it off, the cost of housing was almost a deal breaker for them coming from other states. So it's expensive to Mainers, but it's also expensive to folks from other states too. But they were drawn by the outdoor recreation opportunities overwhelmingly, like Amanda said. I would say, like, one of the questions for us is, how do we double down on our progress this year and for the next few years? So we've improved a lot in terms of productivity, wage growth, and research and development, but we still trail the country. So if the whole country is facing some of the same challenges we are, how do we keep our eye on the ball and stay focused on those forward-looking investments where we make up ground? If things are a little bit unsettled or sideways, that can sometimes be where you can leapfrog ahead.
All right. Patrick, I want to pick up on something else Amanda was talking about when she was talking about international migration. She was talking about what most people refer to as immigration. And as she mentioned, that because of federal policy, we're seeing immigration slow dramatically in this country. What are you hearing from the business community? We know that there is a shortage of shortage in just about every sector, whether you're talking about manufacturing or healthcare or schools. And many of those jobs have been being filled by new Mainers. Are people frustrated?
There's a lot of concern. Not only have a lot of employers successfully integrated new populations into their workforce, they're concerned about maintaining that existing workforce. So there's been so much news on this, it's hard to follow, but there are new fines for individuals to process reauthorization. It's uncertain if there might be a gap for those who are currently working. We're trying to communicate with Maine Chamber members of the practices of how to get ahead of all of these changes. But when you think about our seafood processing, meat processing, and that's simply people who are authorized throughout the year. We also have seasonal workers that we are constantly being more and more reliant on, our tourism industry, agriculture. So that is going to be a major theme of how does the U.S. navigate this? How does Maine, with some of the highest reliance on seasonal workers, will we be exposed to any disruption? And ultimately, I do think that we're going to have to speak with one voice, that this is really an imperative to retain our existing workforce in the state.
Amanda, it was recently announced that Maine, the state, has higher revenues than expected. Why is that? Where's that money coming from?
So a lot of where the revisions from our most recent revenue forecast came from were essentially, the stock market did a lot better than it looked like it was going to do when we met previously. And so capital gains came in much higher than we were anticipating. You know, we've been pretty conservative in our forecasts over the past couple of years. We don't want to get out ahead of ourselves expecting sort of continued really high growth, especially in things like capital gains. And so our forecasts, when we are looking ahead, we say, okay, so we're going to assume that in the next few years they'll come down to sort of a long run average. And when we met back at the end of April, at the time, it looked like the stock market wasn't doing so well, and then it really reversed course and it continued to grow. And so that really threw off a lot of our forecast and caused a lot of the upward reprojection that we did at the most recent forecasting meeting.
All right. Well, we are talking about Maine's economy in 2026. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or comment on Facebook or Instagram. We'd like to know how the economy feels to you if you're a small business owner. Have you been seeing a good year or are you concerned about the coming year? Again, this is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We are getting an economic preview of what to expect in the next year in Maine. With me to talk about that, Patrick Woodcock, who heads the Maine State Chamber of Commerce, Yellow Light Breen, who leads the Maine Development Foundation, and Amanda Rector, who is the state economist for Maine. We invite you to join the conversation. Send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Already questions for you all coming in. But Yellow Light, I want to return to something you said just a little bit earlier. Is you were talking about how to, and I'm not going to paraphrase this correctly, but basically how to seize the momentum, how to double down on what works for Maine. What do you mean by that? What are you thinking about?
Well, we've already achieved a ton of progress against our 10-year economic strategy that we adopted in 2019. We had a great recovery from the pandemic, as Amanda alluded to. And so we've, for example, we were trailing the nation by about 25% in terms of our value added, our productivity per worker. And now we're around 20%. So we've made up ground. The challenge is we have a lot more ground to make up. And part of that, to your earlier question, is about how do we transform opportunity in rural Maine and in some of the traditional industries we've had, so that, we're able to capture new markets and sustain those businesses. And so there's just a lot of exciting stuff going on right now across the so-called blue economy in Maine. There's been a group working to figure out how do we do everything from the ocean, from biopharmaceuticals to, lotion and healthcare. To value added in food products. We've had this effort in new forest bioproducts. How do we double down on biofuels, on bioplastics, on the bioinsulation out of Madison, Maine? And then the new life sciences center is very exciting, where folks have really come together to say, you know what, we have to seize Maine's share of this really burgeoning opportunity across the life sciences. Sweeping the globe, and there's some great anchor companies in Maine already. So if we can, constantly be innovating and adding value in these arenas, then we can offset some of this uncertainty and some of this backsliding, in ways that we haven't captured in the past. And that is what will really lift up rural Maine.
We'll go to calls now. We'll go to Milo, who's calling from Newport. Hi, Milo. Go ahead.
Yes, hello. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I am an attorney from another state. My family and I came up to Maine some years ago. And since coming, the one thing that I've noticed in regards to Maine's economic development is primarily with its stagnation. And I think for economic development and maintenance of a decent economy, what really needs to happen is a little bit of a change in the culture's attitude towards development. I have heard of many, many projects that will begin in Maine, but the moment it gets to a municipal board, it's voted down. and it's dead in the water. Maine has an older population, and it seems that in order to grow, we need some new blood, and there needs to be a cultural shift of accepting, even for something as small as building new housing.
Milo, thank you so much. I think you've put your finger on something a lot of people are concerned about, Patrick.
Yeah, no, this has only gotten worse. I think, Maine experienced two major investments last year, some of the largest in our state's history. Sappy's Somerset Mill, a $500 million investment. The hydro line, which was producing power this morning into the state. And when you look at the regulatory environment, the number of companies that have looked at their experience of other companies and said that either this is not the state to make that investment. And furthermore, when we're looking at multiple decisions, by our account, 5,000 housing units have been rejected at the municipal level over the last 5 years. We really do need to rethink that if we want to retain the Maine that we have lived with and we love, got to retain the Maine economy. And that does going to take reinvestment. And ultimately, a lot of the regulatory experiences are pushing away investment. Our rural economies really do need more light manufacturing, aquaculture in down East Maine. And we're having an experience where I think the opposition has gotten more and more sophisticated, but our regulatory tools to limit that have been stagnant. So ultimately, this is a decision for the legislature, but I do think there needs to be more limits on creating a predictable, that would allow creating a predictable investment environment for the state.
And I want to have all three of you weigh in on this, because I think it's a really important point, whether you're talking something specific like regulations that Patrick's talking about, or Amanda, if you're really just talking about an overall way of thinking, is where people want so much to preserve what makes Maine special that they resist any kind of change at all.
It's really hard, because I'm sympathetic to the idea of these are the things that make Maine special are in many ways things that feel like being sort of taken back in time, small communities, a slower pace, things like that. But you can't have those continue if you're not doing any sort of investment or growth. It may feel like a slower pace, you still need to be moving forward. And I think that balance is one that is difficult to strike. It involves a lot of very open, honest discussion and conversation. And I think that's the way to sort of finally accomplish that, is get everybody who needs to be in the room talking together in a way that is maybe less confrontational and more, okay, we all want the same thing in the end. Let's figure out how we can work together to get there.
Yeah, and at Yellow, we did a Maine Calling program focusing on NIMBYism. We were just talking about housing, but I think this could apply to business as well. People, and over, people were saying, I'm not one of those people. It's just that the project in my town was A, B, and C.
Yeah, and I think there's two things I would say. One is sometimes it's not policy or culture, it's capacity. We just don't have enough people to process the aquaculture permit applications timely. We're just not able to retain the staff at the Land Use Planning Commission. I've heard people say the staff was great and then there was turnover and the person who knew how to move the projects forward left. And I hear the same thing about DEP. So I would hope it could be a nonpartisan thing to say, listen, if we want government to work effectively to support economic growth, you have to be able to hire and retain and have enough talented people. I think the new Maine Office of Community Affairs may help. Because one of the critical challenges is it's easy to be against something if you don't understand it. That's why we've never done that before is such a powerful objection to almost everything. And the uncertainty shuts communities down. And these are volunteer boards. I think I don't like the conversations that typically aim to solve the problem by overruling local input and local control, as opposed to educating, informing, and supporting with the right capacity, local people who are trying to do the right thing. Be able to articulate how something different in the blue economy, that's not the same as wild caught, fisheries is complementary and supportive of a community's aspirations.
Milo, thank you so much for your comment. We're going to go up to Holden and Chris. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Well, good morning, and thank you for the program. Listen, a simple question. I was just wondering what the Rainy Day Fund is up to at this point in time, and what was it when 8 years ago or 7 years ago when Governor Mills took over, and what is it today? That's pretty much my question. Thank
Amanda, do
you.
you have those figures at the tip of your finger? Yeah, those
Uh,
figures
I
at the
do
tip of
not.
your fingers, that's a tongue twister.
I don't have the exact numbers right at my fingertips. I will say that the Rainy Day Fund, which is actually it's the Budget Stabilization Fund, some people still call it the Rainy Day Fund, it is at its statutory maximum, which is I think it's just over $1 billion. It is much higher than it was 8 years ago. And it is at its highest point ever, essentially. I think that with the most recent level that it's hit. So it is a really robust fund. It's really important for a couple of different reasons. One is that if we do see some sort of a downturn in the economy or softening of revenues, it provides a really good cushion for the governor and the legislature to be able to plan ahead and make some more thoughtful policy changes without having to sort of slash programs and services at a time when they're really needed. And it also reflects really well on the state with the bond rating agencies. So Maine does really, really well with the bond ratings, in large part because we have this support for the economy and for the government in the form of this budget stabilization fund.
Chris, thanks for your question. We'll go up to Waterville and Ellery. Hi, Ellery. Go ahead.
Hello, and thank you again for a very interesting program. A question about the headcount that we have. When we increase our population, are there metrics to measure this by? For example, COVID times, were there mostly people coming who have the financial resources to come? Have industries such as tourism put out a call, we need to increase our population for this or that? How about refugee status? Are we increasing our population more because of mandates, dictates? I was wondering if there is a way to categorize or quantify or somehow identify why these populations may be more than just a headcount.
Yellow?
Yeah, Amanda goes deep on the demographics in every presentation she makes. But in general, a lot of the people who have moved to Maine over the last 5 or 10 years have been in kind of the prime of their professional working lives, often with families moving here, people in their 30s. They've been a valuable contribution to our growth. You commented earlier that people who move here with remote work gen may not really look at the local economy to be employed. And that's true. Sometimes that's just because they're making so much more money porting, their job from an urban area, that they don't even think of it as competitive. But it's critical to sustaining all the other local businesses that people frequent and sustaining our civic infrastructure. So we do know that it's a lot of the folks that we would wish were moving to Maine in terms of, they're not retirees, and they're folks who are heavily involved in contributing to our workforce in some way. Maybe Amanda can go deeper on the specifics.
I'm going to let Patrick weigh in first, though. Patrick, you had a thought.
I also just don't want to lose that a core component of economic su success is not just in-migration, but household formations. And I think one important aspect is, are we creating an environment where individuals graduating from our universities can stay in Maine afford it because a lot of other regions are succeeding in this. And it's really a proposition of what's the affordability of housing, what's the cost of utilities, and we've really strained the finances of those in their 20s and 30s that really would like to stay here. There may be economic opportunity, but we are creating an equation that is working against them. So, really creating an affordability agenda with the mindset of retaining those who will add to ultimately births in our state and have a healthy balance of, yes, let's bring people in, but let's not forget about, a traditional way of growing a population.
Right. And Patrick, are you talking about things like what we've talked about a bunch already on this program, the cost of housing, but also the cost of childcare?
Childcare. I mean, really, Maine has over the last 20 years gone from a state that has limited economic opportunities to one that has, we've made improvements, but we really have flipped our brand on affordability. There are ways to address that. But it is going to take, I think Amanda's right. It takes a little bit of an understanding that to retain people in their 20s and 30s, we're going to have to build smaller apartments, denser apartments, taller buildings. That's how other regions have done it. And it will change the character, but can we do that? It certainly changes the character if we lose this population group as well.
Amanda, you have the demographics, as Yellow said.
Yeah, so it's always a challenge to get really good data around the people, sort of the characteristics of people who are moving. There was a study that came out, I think it was maybe the end of 2024, that the Maine Department of Economic and Community Development Commission that did a survey of people who had recently moved to Maine and asked them all sorts of really detailed demographic data and motivations behind moving. Yellow mentioned a little bit of sort of the motivation kind of thing and talking about how housing was a challenge for those folks. That is a really good sort of resource to get sort of a snapshot. In terms of sort of people moving into the state, yeah, if we look at the results of that, it was this sort of prime demographic that Yellow mentioned. Certainly, we also do get retirees who move into the state. I wanted to also talk about Patrick's comment about retaining people in the state. I think particularly for sort of the college graduate population, Maine's student loan tax credit is a great resource. Doesn't solve all the problems, obviously. But it helps people who are paying back student loans get a tax credit for those student loan payments. And so that helps ease part of the burden. And then a lot of it is just a matter of, okay, so what other infrastructure do we need to have in place? A lot of the things that benefit people who are younger also benefit people who are older and also benefit people who want to move into the state. So it really isn't a matter of, oh, well, we're going to do this one thing and it's only going to help this one small segment. Really, a lot of these things, better housing, better childcare, better internet access, that's going to help everybody. And so these are really sort of widespread investments that can be made.
Ellery, thanks for your call. Let's go to Castine and Dan. Hi, Dan. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I'm calling from Castine. I'm a select member here. And I would say the Blue Hill Peninsula, the entire Blue Hill Peninsula, is facing an acute set of challenges. Housing, of course, is getting terribly expensive. I think we're talking north of 50% of the homes here are now second homes. Young people can't move in. There's a real shortage of childcare, and also we're facing huge infrastructure issues. Our towns are aging. There's a lot of money that needs to be paid to the towns. So it's like there's pressure everywhere we turn in town government. And I just wanted to say that, you know, we don't see any easy answers. The problems are all the same, but it's really a challenging time.
And Dan, I could probably add to that how many towns and communities in Maine need to replace their school sometime soon, which is also a real burden. But I want to throw it back to you, Dan. As a select person in the Blue Hill Peninsula, do you see areas of opportunity for your peninsula?
Yeah.
What do you see?
Yeah, so we just received a grant through the Hancock County Planning Commission. We just hired a housing consultant to come in and look at the entire peninsula. We actually have our first meeting with them on Wednesday this week. We just hired them. And that's very exciting to have a professional organization that's done things all over the country come and help the peninsula. It's just a slow process. I mean, the study is 6 or 8 months, and then you have the solution, and then you've got to find builders. I mean, it's just, it's not... it's not like, oh, here's the problem and here's the solution. It's a very slow process.
Dan, thank you so much for your call. Yellow.
Well, you know, I'm thinking a lot of times when we see something, it is the proverbial 15-year overnight success. I mean, I'm thinking about the evolution and redevelopment of Belfast, Maine, or Rockland, Maine, because a lot of times we have this mentality that, oh, if you're on the coast or if you're on Route 1, everything is hunky-dory. And yet, you know, if you said that to someone in Belfast in the 1980s or Rockland in the 80s and 90s, they would say no way. And so it took a lot of gradual diversification of the economy and a lot of deliberate strategic choices by local leaders. I remember one of the development leaders in Belfast saying to me a few years ago, well, when asked, what's the secret of our success? And one was, well, we didn't fumble the opportunities when they were presented to us. I mean, you have plans and strategies, but you also have to be reactive and opportunistic. And I agree completely with Dan. You know, there is no simple overnight silver bullet, you know. But I will say this, as a state, when I started this job 10 years ago, measures of growth was a sea of red flags. We couldn't even figure out some years how to find a gold star to celebrate. And we already knew what the data was going to say in advance. And now the Maine economy is much more dynamic. We have pockets of excellence and progress. And I genuinely believe that our challenge now is doubling down on that investment and workforce development, on that investment in innovation, versus we're just too far in the hole to even know where to begin where we were a few years ago.
Dan, thanks for your call and your perspective as a select person. We are going to take another quick break. Please join the conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Our topic today, Maine's economy. How are we doing and how might we be doing in the coming year? Joining me, Yellow Light Breen with the Maine Development Foundation, State Economist Amanda Rector, and Patrick Woodcock with the Maine State Chamber of Commerce. Share your comments and questions. You have time to send a quick email to talk@mainepublic.org, post on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. We have a call now from Garrett Martin at the Maine Center for Economic Policy. Hi, Garrett.
Hi, Jennifer.
I know that you really want to talk about the differences between what's happening in rural Maine and in the Portland area, right?
Yes. You know, we released our State of Working Maine 2025 report in December, and it really focuses on the role of policy choices in shaping Maine's economy. And, you know, while we've observed this trend over time where Portland has tended to sort of develop at a faster clip than the rest of the state, what we also know, and it's been graphically exposed during the last two recessions, that policy choices we make have a real impact on the outcomes in those communities and how they recover. And so in the 2008 recession, one of the things that happened in Maine was we really didn't avail ourselves of available federal resources and put those to work in ways that could benefit Maine people and communities. We did that through the COVID-19 recession, which was much more robust recovery, not only in the Portland region, but also more broadly across the state. And so I think one of the lessons learned from that research, and I think it's really important to acknowledge that one out of every $5 in the state of Maine in our economy comes from federal sources. And so one of our challenges as a state is to always figure out how to maximize those. The conundrum we're in now, obviously, is that some of those dollars are no longer on offer. They've been pulled back, some investments in, you know, different kinds of infrastructure projects and those kinds of things. And so one of the challenges that the legislature is going to face in the coming year is how to deal with that. Because what we know over time is that when we have invested in rural people and in rural communities, that's not only good for those people and those economies, it's good for the state as a whole. And that's sort of the crossroads we find ourselves at right now, because so many of the cutbacks we're seeing at the federal level are ultimately ones that are going to hit disproportionately people in rural places and disproportionately people who are self-employed or work part-time or seasonal jobs, which, you know, no surprise, is also the profile of the bulk of people who are working and living in rural places as compared to the more urban regions of the state.
Garrett, thanks so much for calling in. Garrett Martin is with the Maine Center for Economic Policy. And Patrick, Garrett touched on something I wanted to return to anyway. We have talked about the impact of changes coming from the federal level, and we have talked about tariffs and we've talked about immigration. But what else? What else are the most important factors affecting Maine's economy now and will be in the coming year?
Well, I think one aspect that, building on the rural theme that with Garrett, is we really have made a series of mistakes on energy policy that we are at the point where we've seen some of the highest electric rate increases. And we won't get into all of them, but I think one aspect that we have to always have a respect for is there have always been two main economies. I think we're slowly not having a mutual respect for those two main economies. And ultimately, rural economy benefits when Portland and Southern Maine is thriving, but equally that it is not helpful when we have more residents on Maine care, on subsidized health care. And ultimately, how can we have rural Maine thrive? And I think it comes down to some foundational issues with creating more competitive energy costs, natural gas prices. There's been discussion on this program on solar policies. We really have to be disciplined. You can't burden employers in the rural areas when they're competing nationally against capital for our forest products industry and light manufacturing.
Yellow, what else? What else is coming from the federal government that you're watching very carefully?
Well, there's an old saying that, you know, the most important social policy is a good paying job. And I think we're seeing that in healthcare in two ways. One is that, you know, there's not enough money in the universe to prop up rural healthcare if, you know, most people are on Medicare and Medicaid. So getting that private employment base re-energized in rural Maine, like Patrick was just saying, is actually a critical part of healthcare financing and healthcare sustainability. But then the second, even more direct piece is that healthcare is the largest employer in almost every county in Maine, especially the rural counties. So the changes in federal healthcare policy, healthcare funding policy, may impact us far more than almost everything else we've talked about so far. So, you know, I think that's going to be a huge challenge for the Maine legislature and for communities, you know, as some of those things go even further upside down. But I just come back to, we have to have economic development in rural Maine in order to sustain that healthcare access.
Amanda, what are your thoughts in terms of how federal policy in the coming year will affect Maine?
You know, I want to take another step back up and talk sort of really macro picture. And I want to go back to what I started with, talking about uncertainty. If we are still in a position in 2026 where federal policy is sort of throwing curveballs at us all the time, it's going to create ongoing instability in the national economy. And Maine's economy really does reflect a lot of what happens in the national economy. And so, you know, things like geopolitical instability and changes to tariff policy, which every time I think that maybe we've finished talking about tariffs and trade, all of a sudden they pop back up again. And we'll have another discussion about another federal government shutdown and figuring out what the next budget is. So all of those things contribute to this increased risk for the national economy, and that flows through to increased risk for the Maine economy too.
Patrick?
You know, the only risk that I would cite, and I've heard this, that, you know, the more exposure you have to the national economy, those companies are doing better in our state. I think the smaller businesses, and another theme that we have really seen is the more affluent are doing better. Lower income households are really being challenged by inflation. And that affects Maine not uniformly. You know, we've had a lot of growth in high-end tourism in Portland, the Midcoast, Bar Harbor, but we really do have, you know, a more appealing market for lower income households, and they are being challenged. And I've really heard this through the businesses that they really saw that reflected in 2025 data. And I think that's a risk for the state. It's also a risk for our smaller businesses if they are less able to integrate new technology, artificial intelligence, to make those productivity gains. We are a state of small businesses, so we really need to do an effective job of integrating these tools. The big companies are doing that as fast as possible, and we really need to be agile with small businesses to do the same.
We'll go to Dick calling from Portland. Hi, Dick. Go ahead.
Hi. I am relatively new to Maine and to Portland from St. Louis, and served as CEO of the Regional Chamber of Commerce in both Denver and St. Louis. And I really very much agree with the comments of several of the panelists on certainty and the sort of either-or mentality that seems to be getting in the way in Maine and in Portland of either one is for development or one is for quality of life. And certainly Denver was an experience to have to balance those. One of the things that helped in that was the willingness of the business and the environmental community to create some initiatives such as regional funding for arts and scientific organizations, regional funding for parks and transit, and a major transit initiative, $1 billion transit initiative for both the urban and the rural parts of the metropolitan area. And it would seem to me that that may represent an opportunity for both Maine and for Portland.
Dick, thank you for your call. And so interesting, because although Denver's a much bigger city than any city in Maine, I do think that there are a lot of similarities in lifestyle and in ways that people think about how they choose to live. Yellow, go ahead.
Well, I think we have a really weak regional infrastructure in Maine historically. It's been hard to collaborate across town lines. We have some great entities, you know, that can help do that. One of the callers mentioned their regional planning commission earlier, you know, in the discussion. So how do we continue to build the muscle for that in Maine, but in a way that is not adversarial, but is collaborative? I think I agree with the caller 1,000,000% on that. And I just before the hour ends, I want to give a big shout out to what I think could be one of the most important economic initiatives, which is free community college. Just what Patrick was talking about and Garrett in terms of the opportunity gap in Maine. I think, you know, in the long run, the biggest thing we can do there is to help people realize their own full potential, you know, as citizens and workers. And that's giving them access to those skills, and free community college is a door opener for that. So, you know, our biggest tool to blunt that gap is to get ahead of it in terms of people setting their own course.
Well, Patrick, let me ask you, and it's been a couple of years now, several years now, since the Free Community College initiatives got into effect. Are Maine employers starting to see the benefit of that?
Honestly, I was skeptical of the proposal when it was initially came. I've become a supporter, a believer in it. I think it's had a lot of success of bringing new population into the community colleges. However, I do think we need to do a better job of having more employers integrated into the community college level. We've had huge success with Bath Iron Works, some of our healthcare systems, really integrating these new populations, nursing, into their long-term worker development programs, making sure that smaller businesses also partner So I do think that it has been a success, and we need to expand to other sectors of the economy.
Well, that's going to be our last word for this hour. And Dick, thank you for your call. And thank you for our guest today, Amanda Rector, Maine State economist, Patrick Woodcock, you just heard, President and CEO of the Maine State Chamber of Commerce, and Yellow Light Breen, President and CEO of the Maine Development Foundation. Today's sound engineer was Sandra Harris. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, we turn our attention to the political scene in Maine. What to watch for in 2026. We will only have an hour for that program. It should be a fast-paced one. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.